Okay, get this. A single page of original comic book art sold for over $3 million. Can you believe that?
Wow. Yeah, it's definitely not just kid stuff anymore, is it?
Not even close. Welcome, everyone, to the Deep Dive. Today, we are really peeling back the layers on the incredible universe of comic books. We've gathered some really fascinating sources here.
Yeah, we're covering a lot of ground from the very first superheroes right up to, modern cosplay and even digging into that whole manga versus Western comics thing.
And this is for you, our listener. You want to get the full picture, get knowledgeable quickly, but without wading through tons of text, right?
Exactly. So we've kind of curated the best bits. Think of this as your shortcut to the most surprising insights, those moments where it all just clicks.
Our mission basically is to pull out the coolest, most important stuff from all this material we've looked at. We're going to trace how the art changed.
The origins of iconic characters.
Yeah, why we kind of love the villains sometimes.
The storytelling tricks, like death and plot twists.
How they're actually made, the indie scene.
The leap to movies, the fandom, cosplay.
And just the big conversations happening around comics right now. Okay, let's dive in. Where better to start than the art itself, how it's evolved?
It's really amazing how the art reflects, technology and culture changing over time. Back in the Golden Age, the 30s to the 50s,
Right.
the style was really bold, simple, very expressive. But that wasn't just like an artistic choice.
Was practical.
Yeah, driven by printing limitations and crazy deadlines. Think early Superman, Captain Marvel, the square jaws, clean lines, bright primary
And
colors.
forced creativity almost.
Totally. They had to be smart with layouts and expressions to get the emotion across. Kind of lay the groundwork,
You can feel that energy even then. But then the Silver Age hits, mid-50s, and things just visually explode,
Well,
right?
absolutely. You get artists like Jack Kirby coming in, and he just revolutionizes action.
Kirby crackle.
Exactly. Those kinetic panels, that visual language for motion, for power, and then Steve Ditko's Spider-Man.
So different. Kind of lanky and alive.
Yeah, that nervous energy. And artists started using panel layout, the composition, much more deliberately to build tension, control the pace, focus emotion.
Which brings us to the 80s and 90s. Things got darker, didn't they? More complex visually.
Definitely. Think Frank Miller's Dark Knight Returns. So much shadow, so much grit.
Yeah, gritty is the word.
And then you had people like Dave McKean doing these really experimental covers for Sandman using collage, photography, abstraction.
It felt like the art was growing up with the readers. Was it reflecting society or just that the audience wanted more?
Probably a bit of both, Society was changing, sure, but the audience that grew up reading comics was maturing too. They wanted deeper stories, and the art followed suit.
And then digital tools changed everything again.
Huge shift. Photoshop, Clip Studio Paint.
Yes.
Suddenly you could do much more refined inking, coloring, lettering, layering effects, complex lighting. It started looking way more cinematic.
But it wasn't just tech, right? There were other influences creeping in.
Oh, absolutely. Indie comics were pushing boundaries, and international comics, especially manga, had a huge impact.
Manga's dynamic panels, those exaggerated emotions.
Yeah. And look at indie creators like Chris Ware with his minimalist grids, or Jillian Tamaki's watercolor work, Daniel Clowes' retro style. They're all playing with the form.
So it's super clear the art isn't just decoration, it's doing heavy lifting in the storytelling.
Oh, completely. Like our sources say, it's part of the storytelling grammar. Panel shape, spacing, perspective, line weight, they all control the rhythm, the emotional tone.
It's like the artist is the director, set designer, cinematographer.
All rolled into one.
Yeah.
Guiding your eye, shaping how you feel page by page.
Okay, art evolution covered. Let's talk origins. These superheroes, where did they actually come from? What sparked them?
Well, they didn't just pop out of nowhere, right? They came out of very specific times. The struggles and dreams of the 20th century, the earliest big ones. They showed up during the Great Depression.
Makes sense. People needed heroes then, badly.
It's exactly a need for hope, resilience. So, 1938, you get Siegel and Shuster creating Superman.
The OG.
Basically, yeah. Alien, super strong, morally perfect. Kind of the ultimate wish fulfillment, especially with poverty and fascism rising. He was the blueprint.
But then Batman arrives just a year later and he's completely different, darker.
Coldly, no superpowers, just this intense trauma seeing his parents killed, channeled into this iron will to fight crime. Much more personal, more psychological.
And Wonder Woman in the 40s, another archetype again.
Yeah, created by William Moulton Marston, who, fun fact, also invented the lie detector, hence the lasso of truth.
No way.
Yeah. She was pretty radical for the time, a warrior princess representing feminist ideals, strong but compassionate.
Then World War II hits and you get Captain America, very much a product of his time.
Oh, absolutely. Yep. Literally punching Hitler on covers. A huge morale booster, pure patriotism.
But the 60s, the Marvel age, that felt like a real shift. Suddenly heroes had problems.
That's the key thing. Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, Steve Ditko, they introduce flawed, relatable heroes. Spider-Man's an anxious teen juggling homework and saving the city.
Mm-hmm.
The X-Men are born different, hated and feared. Clear metaphors for civil rights, identity struggles. These heroes were messy, emotional, more human.
They weren't just escapism anymore.
Right. They were reflecting the anxieties, the changing values of the 60s, like cultural mirrors, as some sources put it.
Mirrors and capes. Okay, let's flip that coin. Villains. Why do we sometimes secretly root for the bad guy? What makes them so compelling?
That's a great question. It's usually more than just being evil, isn't it? The unforgettable ones have depth, maybe tragedy, real complexity. They often mirror the hero's dark side. And yeah, sometimes you kind of feel for them.
But the Joker, he's pure chaos, right? No real origin, no clear motive, which is terrifying.
Exactly. That unpredictability is key. But you could also see his madness as like a rejection of a chaotic world. And he's the perfect dark reflection of Batman's own trauma, his fight against disorder.
Then you've got someone like Magneto. You can almost see his point, even if his methods are extreme.
Definitely. A classic tragic anti-hero. His fight for mutant supremacy comes directly from his trauma as a Holocaust survivor. He forces you to ask that tough question. When does fighting injustice become tyranny itself?
And what about Venom? He started as a scary alien monster.
Right, a vengeful parasite. But he evolved into this huge fan-favorite anti-hero. Shows how much we're drawn to that moral ambiguity, that gray area.
Is there a psychological reason we like villains, exploring dark stuff safely?
Some researchers think so. Villains let us explore taboo emotions, power, rage, revenge vicariously. It's been called moral pornography, getting a thrill from extreme behavior without consequences.
Huh. Interesting. So we love them because they reveal uncomfortable truths, maybe about ourselves, and show that even evil can have a backstory.
Yeah, exactly. They complicate things, make us think.
Okay, speaking of complications, let's talk about death in comics, specifically superhero death. It happens a lot, but it rarely sticks, does it?
Huh? Yeah, it's a famous trope. But it's still a powerful storytelling tool, even if it's often temporary. It's less about if they stay dead and more about the impact of the death itself. It carries symbolic weight.
I remember when Superman died in the 90s. It was everywhere, mainstream news, everything.
Oh, yeah, huge cultural moment. Headlines, crowds at comic shops, news anchors talking about it. It was this bold statement. Even gods can fall.
But then he came back.
Of course, reborn, revitalized as part of the cycle.
And it's happened to so many others. Jean Grey as Dark Phoenix. That was huge for X-Men fans.
Absolutely. Her transformation, sacrifice, death.
Mm.
It resonated deeply. And her eventual returns often echo these big themes of sacrifice, redemption, rebirth, almost like biblical narratives.
Captain America, Batman, Wolverine, they've all died and come back. It's like a revolving door.
It is. There's this philosophical idea, eternal return, that one source mentions.
Yeah.
It's not just repetition, but renewal. Each return adds new meaning, new layers to the character.
So even though we know they'll probably come back, the death itself still hits hard because of what it means in that moment in the story.
Precisely. It's about the emotional weight of that moment, not the permanence.
Got it. Now, from dramatic deaths to jaw-dropping plot twists, comics are masters of pulling the rug out from under you, aren't they?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Just when you think you know a character, bam, something completely changes the game. And the best twists aren't just for shock. They challenge assumptions, expand the universe, push boundaries.
I'm still not over Captain America saying Hail Hydra. I mean, Cap.
Right. Captain America, Steve Rogers, #1. That was a shocker. The symbol of virtue. Uttering that phrase, it tapped into anxieties about identity, trust, misinformation.
And they explained it later with like a cosmic cube messing with reality. Classic comic.
Pretty much. But the initial impact, the conversations it sparked, huge.
What about older twists? Like when fans got to vote on whether Robin lived or died.
A Death in the Family, 1988. Yeah, that was radical, giving readers that power. And they voted for him to die brutally at the Joker's hands.
But even Jason Todd came back eventually, right? As Red Hood.
Yep. Angry, violent, murderly gray. His death and return completely reshaped his character.
The X-Men universe seems like it's built on twists. Alternate timelines, clones, psychic stuff.
Totally. It's kind of their thing. Think House of M, No More Mutants, or The Brutal Future of Days of Future Past. These things have massive ripple effects.
And the multiverse is key to all this, isn't it? Allows for infinite possibilities.
Yeah, exactly. Infinite parallel realities mean characters can be endlessly rebooted, reimagined. They're eternally adaptable.
So twists aren't just shock value. They deepen characters, challenge the story, keep fans hooked and arguing.
Precisely. They're emotional pivot points, keeps things dynamic.
Okay, I'm super curious now about the nuts and bolts. How does a comic book actually get made? It seems so collaborative.
It really is. A tightly coordinated dance between writer, penciler, inker, colorist, letterer. It's a fascinating team effort.
So where does it start? The script.
Almost always. It's like a screenplay, but broken down panel by panel. Description of the action, the setting, all the dialogue, pacing notes. Could be one panel on a page, could be 10.
Then the penciler takes that script and draws it all out.
Yep. But it's more than just drawing. They're visualizing the story framing shots, composing the page, deciding character gestures, expressions. They control how your eye moves.
Okay, pencil's done. Then the inker comes in. What do they add?
The inker adds definition, depth, mood. They use different line weights, add shadows, contrast. It refines the pencils, makes them pop, adds atmosphere. It's subtle but crucial.
Then the colorist makes it all vibrant.
Absolutely vital role. Using digital tools mostly now, they set the tone, evoke emotion. Sunny day, stormy night, the heat of battle color does so much heavy lifting.
And finally, the letterer puts in all the words. Seems tricky not to cover up the art.
It is. They play speech bubbles, sound effects, captions. Good lettering is invisible, you just read it. Great lettering is immersive, part of the art itself.
Sounds like a mix of old school drawing and high-tech digital work.
Exactly. Lots of artists blend hand drawing with digital editing now, and it ranges from one person doing everything in the indie world to, like, mini movie studio teams at the big publishers. It's labor intensive, but really rewarding.
Let's talk more about that indie scene. It feels like that's where a lot of the really exciting, boundary pushing stuff is happening now.
You're spot on. While Marvel and DC dominate superheroes, the indie scene is where the medium really experiments and reinvents itself. Creators tackle genres, formats, themes that are maybe too risky for the big guys.
Any specific examples people should check out?
Oh, definitely. Saga by Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples is phenomenal. It's like Star Wars meets Romeo and Juliet, a space opera about love, war, family, with just stunning art.
Sounds cool.
And Monstrous by Marjorie Liu and Sana Takeda, a dark fantasy epic, amazing anime-influenced art, complex politics, a heroine battling literal inner demons. Lush, deep stuff.
Wow. Any others?
So many. Paper Girls, Something is Killing the Children, Black Hole, Why, The Last Man, Alzim Bettel's Fun Home. They explore gender, trauma, memory, queerness. Really powerful work showing the breadth of indie comics.
And webcomics seem huge now too, right? Platforms like Webtoon.
Yeah, digital platforms and Kickstarter have been game changers. Creators can bypass gatekeepers, reach global audiences directly. Lots of popular shows and movies started as webcomics heartstopper, Scott Pilgrim.
So indie creators have more freedom, no decades of continuity to worry about.
Exactly. It's a diverse experimental playground, constantly redefining what comics can be. Really exciting.
Okay, let's shift to the big screen. Comics to film. It feels like every other blockbuster these days started as a comic book.
It's undeniable, isn't it? Comics and film share that visual language, that love of spectacle. It's a natural fit, and the influence is massive now.
Those really early adaptations were kind of cheesy, though, right?
Huh. Yeah, the 40s, 50s serials, the 60s Batman show, fun, but maybe lacked cinematic weight. The real game changer was probably Superman. The movie in 78 made people believe a man could fly, you know.
But the 2000s felt like the real revolution. X-Men, Spider-Man.
Absolutely. Those proved superhero movies could be character-driven, emotional, and huge blockbusters. And then Iron Man in 2008 kicked off the MCU, bringing that shared universe concept to film in a massive way.
It's not just Marvel fare either. We got darker stuff like Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy, Watchmen, V for Vendetta.
Right. And visually, Into the Spider-Verse was incredible, mimicking the comic page look, groundbreaking animation.
It's interesting how these movies pull from all sorts of genres, too. Sci-fi, westerns, noir.
Yeah, one source points that out. Superhero films borrow from everywhere, just like the comics themselves are often genre hybrids.
Feels like studios are now actively mining comics for IP, for franchises.
That's the business model now, for sure. But right. The best adaptations remember the core. People in impossible situations facing human struggles. That's the timeless formula.
Let's talk fandom now. Specifically, cosplay. It's such a visible, creative part of the culture. What's the appeal?
Cosplay is fandom made flesh, basically. It's craft, performance, passion, all mixed together, embodying the character, their story, their look.
Seeing it at a Comic-Con for the first time is kind of mind-blowing, the effort.
It's amazing. Costuming has been around sci-fi cons forever, but it really exploded with anime culture and became the signature thing at Comic-Cons in the 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
You can't imagine a con without it now.
And the skill level varies so much, from simple costumes to professional movie-quality builds.
Totally. Casual fans mm-hmm. to serious artisans using EVA foam, 3D printing. But it's not really about perfection. It's about expressing that love for the character, you know?
And it seems like it can be really empowering for people, too, exploring identity.
That's a really great point. For LGBTQ plus fans, it can be liberating gender-bending characters, embodying non-binary identities. For neurodivergent fans, embodying a familiar hero can be comforting. It's really inclusive, all ages.
It's not just at cons either, right? There's a huge online community.
Oh, yeah. Instagram, TikTok, forums, sharing builds, tips, connecting with others. Some people even make careers out of it. Patreon, guest appearances, working with companies.
But really, at its heart, it's just showing love for the stories.
Exactly. Love made visible, as one source put it. It's saying, this story matters to me. And often finding your best, most imaginative self in the process.
So, for someone thinking about going to their first Comic-Con, any advice? They seem huge and maybe a bit intimidating.
They can be sensory overload, but they're basically giant celebrations of fandom. Think pilgrimages, cultural hubs, for anyone who loves these worlds.
San Diego is the big one, but there are massive cons everywhere now.
Absolutely. New York, Emerald City in Seattle, London, MCM, Tokyo Comic, they're global. And it's not just comics anymore. Panels, movie previews, celebrities, cosplay contests, artist alley, merch, fan meetups. Studios make huge announcements there.
Okay, survival tips for a first-timer?
Plan ahead. Check the schedule. Prioritize panels. They fill up fast. Bring snacks and water lines are long. Food is pricey. Wear comfy shoes. You'll walk miles.
Good tip.
Respect cosplayers. Always ask before taking photos. Admire. Don't objectify. And definitely explore Artist Alley. Find indie creators, hidden gems.
Sounds like it's about more than just buying stuff or seeing stars. It's the experience.
Totally. Cons are surprisingly emotional. Fans cry, meeting creators, friendships form in line. It's a place where introverts find their tribe. Creativity is everywhere, a real sense of belonging.
Let's tackle that old idea. Comics are just for kids. Why are so many adults reading them?
That's such an outdated view now. Sure, nostalgia plays a part for some, reconnecting with childhood heroes. But honestly, comics today are full of sophisticated, mature stories written for adults.
It's way beyond just superheroes now.
Oh, completely. Think Watchmen, Mesamis, Persepolis, Sandman, Saga. They deal with war, trauma, identity, politics, death. Heavy stuff. And the visual storytelling can amplify emotion in ways prose sometimes can't.
Is there research on why adults connect with them?
Yeah, well, study found characters like Batman or Spider-Man resonate because they deal with real struggles, grief, responsibility, mental health, even within fantastical settings. Makes them relatable.
And they're even used in schools and therapy now.
Increasingly. Graphic novels are great tools for teaching complex subjects in history, literature, philosophy, even therapy. They're engaging, cognitively rich.
So comics aren't a genre, they're a medium, with something for pretty much everyone.
Exactly. Horror, romance, sci-fi, memoir, nonfiction.
Yeah.
It's all there. An immersive, intelligent, satisfying alternative to screens or dense books for many adults.
Okay, let's wade into the great debate. Manga versus Western comics. What are the key differences people talk about?
It's more than just art style, really. It reflects culture, format, how you read it.
So manga, that's Japanese comics, right? Read right to left.
Yep. Usually black and white, often serialized weekly or monthly in big anthology magazines, then collected into affordable paperbacks called tankbon. And the range of genres is massive. Everything imaginable.
And Western comics. Mostly monthly, full color, superheroes dominate.
Largely, yeah. Especially from the big publishers like Marvel and DC. Shared universes, reboots, multiverses are common features.
What about art and storytelling differences?
Generally, manga art can be more stylized, emphasizing expressive characters, dynamic movement, maybe less detailed background sometimes. Western superhero art often aims for more realism, detailed anatomy, environments.
Narrative structure.
Manga often follows one long story, usually by one creator team. Western comics, especially superheroes, often pass characters between different writers and artists. The tone can differ too, manga might spend more time on quiet emotional moments, while Western comics often focus on big action and drama.
And who reads them?
Historically, manga is read widely by all ages in Japan. Western comics skewed younger and male, though that's changing, becoming much more inclusive now.
But it feels like they're influencing each other more now.
Definitely. Lots of crossover hybrid styles emerging. Artists arrow techniques from both traditions.
So no winner, just different ways to tell stories.
Exactly. Different languages of visual storytelling. And readers benefit from having access to both amazing traditions.
Okay, back to superheroes for a sec. Those epic showdowns. Batman versus Superman, Hulk versus Thor. Why do fans love arguing about who would win?
It's the ultimate playground for imagination, isn't it? Pure fandom passion meeting what-if scenarios. The debates are endless and half the fun.
It's like a thought experiment about power.
Totally. What is power? Strength? Smarts? Strategy? Willpower? How do morals factor in during a fight? Magic versus science versus brute force? It raises cool questions.
Yeah, sometimes they even do official crossovers, right? DC versus Marvel.
Yeah, those are legendary. Fans voted on outcomes sometimes. Wolverine versus Lobo, Superman versus Hulk. Still debated today. And even within universes, you get ideological clashes, like X-Men versus Avengers. It's not just punches, it's philosophy sometimes.
So they're like modern myths, exploring morality, ego, ethics, through these colorful duels.
Great way to put it. And really, the fans are the winners, getting to explore all that.
I saw this fun idea in the sources. Guess that comic panel. The idea that single panels become iconic.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Some images just burn themselves into your brain. Like Spider-Man lifting that wreckage in Amazing Spider-Man #33. Pure willpower captured in one shot tells you everything about him.
It's like visual poetry. We should try a couple. Okay, listeners, picture this. The Joker beating Jason Todd with a crowbar.
Oof. Yeah, instantly recognizable. The brutality, the tragedy of a death in the family, haunting.
But yeah, how about Wolverine's silhouette against a sunset?
Evokes old man Logan, right? That weary, world-worn feeling. You see his whole history in that shadow.
One more. Superman cradling Supergirl's body.
Crisis on Infinite Earths #7. Devastating. Iconic image of loss, sacrifice in the DC universe. Yeah, these panels become emotional flashpoints.
Such a cool way to test your fandom and appreciate the art. Just one image holding so much story.
Exactly. Celebrates the power of that single perfect frame.
Okay, nearing the end here, let's touch on something fun. Comic book urban legends. With almost 100 years of history, there must be tons of myths and rumors.
Oh, absolutely. The industry's full of them. Myths, half-truths, weird anecdotes. It's all part of the lore.
Okay, give us one fact or myth. Walt Disney is cryogenically frozen. Okay, maybe not comics, but was it ever in comics?
That's a classic legend, totally false. But yeah, it actually got parodied in a satirical comic called The Unfunnies. Okay, how about this? Fact or myth, Batman once fought Dracula.
That sounds wild enough to be true. Fact.
Fact, Batman and Dracula. Red Rain, Batman even becomes a vampire himself in that storyline.
No way. Okay, another. The comics code banned a Spider-Man drug story?
Partly true. Marvel wanted to do an anti-drug story in the 70s. The code refused approval. Marvel published it anyway, without the code seal. It was a big deal. Led to the code being revised.
Wow, pushing boundaries. Last one, did Marvel and DC characters ever merge into hybrid characters?
Yes. The Amalgam Universe in the 90s, they mashed up heroes like Darkclaw, who was Batman plus Wolverine, and Super Soldier, Superman plus Captain America.
That's amazing. These stories behind the stories are great.
Totally. Lost issues, band covers, secret endings.
Yeah.
Fans love digging up this stuff. Keeps the culture alive.
Finally, for anyone listening who dreams of creating their own superhero, there's this cool build your own superhero exercise. What's the basic idea?
It's a fun mix of game, art, and figuring out what makes a hero tick. You need a few key things. Origin, how they get powers, radioactive spider, alien planet, magic accident. Power, what can they do? Super speed, shape-shifting, mind-reading, emotion blasts.
Cool.
Flaw, this is crucial. What's their weakness? Lose control when angry, haunted by the past, need sunlight, makes them relatable.
All right, not perfect.
And a nemesis who's their opposite. Someone who knows their secrets reflects their worst fears. This whole exercise is really storytelling practice. Powers are hopes, flaws are fears. The costume is armor.
I love that, like a mini character design workshop.
Exactly. They do it at cons, in classrooms. Fun way to get what makes heroes resonate. In a world full of existing heroes, creating your own lets you shape a narrative that's uniquely yours.
Your own story. I like that.
Yeah. Your distinct voice in that long tradition.
Well, this has been awesome. A really deep dive into comics. We went from the arc's evolution, the hero origins, the villains we love.
Death, plot twists, how they're made, the indie scene, movies, cosplay, cons.
Right. So much ground. I think for me, seeing how the art always adapted, always reflected the times, that was really cool. And the complexity of villains, they're not just bad guys. They really hold up a mirror.
And hopefully for everyone listening, this gave you those aha moments, a solid understanding without feeling buried in info.
Definitely. So maybe think about it. What kind of hero would you create? What powers, what flaws, or why do those villains stick with us? Maybe check out some of the creators or series we mentioned.
And here's a final thought to chew on. In this world where comics jump easily from page to screen to games, what's next? How will this amazing art form evolve? What new stories and how will they be told?
Ooh, good question. Something to ponder. Thanks so much for joining us on this deep dive.
Yeah, thanks everyone.
Until next time.